Hello and welcome to this episode of Discussing Documentaries with myself, Matt Wills, and Rick Wharton. Thank you very much for downloading the episode. Today, part four of The Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst. If you're just tuning into this...
you're not right in the head.
You probably need to go back and listen to episodes 1, 2, and 3, or you might be a little bit out of sorts. But just to quickly bring you up to speed.
This is the best part, because I knew you'd have to start in the same cadence as ever. You've got your rhythm to it now.
Well, let's just recap where we're at, right?
This is right and left-handed now, if Matt can't tell you what accolades it's got and what he thought.
I can't tell you any of this stuff.
I wondered at what point I would have to jump in and go, this is probably the same episode of a podcast as part three.
Let's just recap where we are. Loads of body parts have washed up on a beach. And then we find out 20 years ago, some woman went missing. And it's all related back to one guy. And his name is Robert Durst. And the whole thing centres around him. If you are just joining us, welcome to the party. You're a little bit late, but listen, you're now fully up to speed, because we're now entering this episode. This episode is 4 of 6, and it's called The State of Texas versus Robert Durst. And here we are. I haven't seen any of the others. I'm new to episode 4. Rick, lead us in, man. Your favourite, you said.
This is one of the ones where it gets cooking.
It does get cooking. It really does.
Okay, this is fucking excellent, this one. And you can tell they've eked it out a little. Like the last one, they could have just slammed that last two together. That could have been one documentary, these last two episodes. But if this was a TV thing being released each week, you'd be like, I can't wait for the next fucking episode on this one. Like, this is fascinating to hear what had happened. So it starts off, and they're walking around the prison that Bob Durst had to be in after being caught for jumping bail. Now, this prison, I'm guessing it's a decommissioned prison now. Would you say that from the looks of it?
The lights are off, right? Which is weird, considering they're locking up more people than ever in that country. So, yeah, but they're also...
It's a hell of a business.
It's a racket, right? It's a pure racket.
It's a bums on electric chairs business is what it is.
He was so funny. The minute he started talking, and the way he speaks, and he just went, and everyone was so nice to me in prison.
I got along with everyone in prison. They called me Mr. Bob. And you see, the bit that got me is the Polaroids within mates. Yes. It's like, who's got the camera in there? Who's shoved the digital camera up their ass to get pictures with Robert Durst? And if you've ever seen The Wire, when they pay the heavies to go in and look after Omar or things like that, you've got these two massive guys with their arms folded stood behind them. Like, I wonder if they got a little bit of cash to make sure
they got some Durst dough. Yeah, for a protection racket. But he was so blasé about it. So, but then what I've noticed about the cadence of his speech, he's factual. That's all he is about everything. He speaks in bullet points and really blunt, right? Yeah. Emotionless.
He's soft, blunt but soft. It's a weird little delivery technique. I enjoy him. I truly enjoy him. Even if everything we've seen of him, I do enjoy it.
He creeps me the fuck out.
He goes, they were all much lower. You don't get a lot of rich people in jail. And whatever they accomplish in their lives, they did it on their own. I would always have this thing, all this money.
That tickled me.
And it's just like, oh, fucking bless your cotton socks, Bob.
That was so funny when he's like, yeah, this money thing has been like a poison chalice around my neck. Has it, Bob? Has it really? Oh, you poor fucker.
Yeah, we're going to... This episode really shows what a poison chalice having a fucking £1 billion can be. Because this is brilliant from start. So they cut it together with the TV reports of the time of the court case happening. So this is amped up. They've got it on TV. People are tuning into this, and I swear to God, they are switching off Bobby Fischer's World Championship rematch to watch the Robert Durst case, because this is far more fun.
They basically, obviously, they can't show the jury, but they have a few of the jury members are talking heads. But what they keep cutting to throughout this episode are the lawyers doing their thing in the court. This is not an act out. This is actually of the thing. They've even got Robert Durst in court giving his testimony. Yeah. And he's the first bloody witness they call up. How cocky is that, right? And Cody's back.
Oh, it is great. Great.
Detective Cody Gonzalez. Yeah, bless
Cody Gonzalez. He's back. But they go through a few things. So they say that, look, he's wanted a murder in New York. They don't have a body. He's wanted a murder in LA. They don't have enough evidence to put him there. In Texas, seemed like a home run for the prosecution. It's the home run. And it's like, that's just not the way to pick a squirt.
They got a body. They got the murder weapon. They got the suspect. He's confessed, right? This is a home run. This is exactly how home runs are made.
They skim
He's
across.
He's going
this.
Down, son.
He jumped bail is a thing. Do you know he what I mean? You think bail. That would have came up in thingy. But they also say that the only charge they could come to was first degree murder. Now, I've seen this in a handful of documentaries. The Hulk Hogan documentary about his sex tape that was leaked.
Yes.
Nobody Speaks.
Yes. Brilliant documentary. Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
What they do on that is, to go after Gorka, they drop a few charges so that their insurance is null and void. So they could have got them on more, but they dropped a few charges. So it's like, no, you're liable for this because we have lawyers that know what you're insured for. Now, so normally they would litter. If this was me and you, you'd be on charge for
jumping bail.
Manslaughter, murder one, dismantled. Yeah. And they do away with all of those and just say it's just murder, which I think, again, is something, some money Durst voodoo caused that to happen. So I don't know why that's...
Oh, yeah.
And then you meet the three lawyers. So the first one we've met is the cowboy lawyer, Dick DeGaron, who's walking into court with his cowboy hat on, and he's looking up.
He strides. Yeah. Like a man.
He has been held in contempt for arriving on a horse before.
He's got more testosterone in his little finger than me and you have got in our entire bodies. That guy is a man. He built his own house, used his fists as hammers.
He is the sizzle. Now, lawyer number two, Michael Ramsey.
You know what he's called, don't you?
What's that? Dick DeGaron.
Dick DeGaron. You know what the TV call him as? The legendary lawyer, Dick DeGaron. Yeah. That's who you want defending you on a murder trial, right? Legendary lawyer.
And again, it's all just amped up for entertainment, and this all plays into it. Because, like I said, the way I look at them, right, he's got three lawyers that you can kind of see throughout the thing, plus their legal team behind them. So they talk about the payment of the two, and then there's the guy of the goatee as well. But the second one is the two that they were arguing with the missus of who to hire.
Yeah. So they get three quarters of a meal each, don't they?
Yeah. And together it's 250 for him, 250 to them, and an extra 250 for something else.
Oh, okay. Oh, right.
So $750,000, and he goes, and God, I hope that gets me acquitted. Not innocent, not guilty, acquitted. there's like little legal terms and differences.
Because I already know, watching episodes 1 to 3, that he served time. So I know they're going to find him guilty, right? They're going to find him guilty. Yeah. He's admitted it. There's a body. He's back to fucking rights. It doesn't matter how much you spend on lawyers. He's guilty.
The second lawyer is Michael Ramsey. Now, this guy, he's the stick. The other guy, he's the window dressing. He's the window dressing. He is, what's he called? I can't believe I'm forgetting the guy's name. He's one of my heroes. Damned United. You know who I mean? The manager,
Brian Clough.
Brian Clough, yeah. There's Brian Clough and there's Taylor. And, Brian Clough, he's the window dressing. He's the one guy on Parkinson and making a show of himself. Then there's the other guy.
Peter Taylor.
Peter Taylor telling him what fullbacks to buy. All right.
Peter Taylor's like, the Matt Wills. He gets the shit done.
But the Michael,
the Rick
Michael
Wharton
Ramsey
is the guy who throws in there.
I'm the one that the daft out of a catchphrase. Yeah. But so Michael Ramsey, I know you've not got into this world enough yet, but there is a wrestling commentator called Good Old JR, where everything he says sounds important and it sounds factual. Now you watch this guy's face; there is no daftness to him. Goes, you know, did you do this? And just whenever he talks, he is Good Old JR. He's got a likable voice. He is stern, but not too stern, and he is like on point to his message at all times, and it is fucking laser focused. And the difference between the two is brilliant. But this guy, I think, has killed Masuse Arts. Like, there is something about this guy where it's just like, could you prove that I just jammed that down your throat? There's only me and you in the room. In a court of law, you owe me £10 now because I ate your meal. That's how that works.
But what I noticed about all the lawyers, that I believe the American term would be heavy set.
Mm, yeah, they've got money.
They're all big fellas, right? They're all like...
Everything's bigger in Texas, man.
Oh, God, yeah, right. They must be at least 6'3", 6'4". And they're not fat, right? But, I mean, they're linebackers. Is that the right position in American football?
Yeah, I would say, well, they're not receivers. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, they're not runners, right? But they're going to... They push the scrum forward from a rugby thing. They're the guys, yeah. And then we cut to one of the jurors, Chris Lovell.
That bald jury guy, this is how many times I've seen this documentary. At some point, okay, there is a table laid out with newspapers. There is one newspaper of Robert Durst shaking hands with him in this guy with a new car. I swear to God, right? I have not dreamt that. There is some scene, some point when they're laying out all the evidence and it just scans over it. Because he's a guy, because even on the artist illustration, they show everyone facing whatever's going on, and then he's facing the other way. So you can tell he's an outlier. Like, little fucking things being put in your mind, and this guy, oh, he's an asshole. I would have hated to have been on a jury with him.
What's the what's the film? It's a Michael, I think it's him, John Cusack, and he's fixing the tobacco jury. About art, you know, sorry, guns. No, he's fixing the gun jury.
I haven't seen that one, but there's a few like it.
Yeah, and basically, he reminded me of just the way he was talking. You're like, have you rigged the jury? It did feel a bit.
Seems like someone's got to you.
Yeah, because he said, like, even later on, I'm cutting forward a bit, but we'll go straight. He said, you know, there was one woman, she wasn't convinced, so we convinced her.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's, hang on a second. I've seen 12 Angry Men. Is it as simple as that? Bloody hell. And we'll just convince them. This is a knife. Boom.
But here's what I think happened. All right. Because you have even the judge is in this documentary. Like, they talk about the mass media circus that it was. Now, this is small town Galveston, Texas. They go, right, we found him. He jumped bail. He's guilty. They don't have a whole heap they think they even need to do for the prosecution. Right? So they have world media, local media, People's Magazine, everyone. They're going through, like, you know what those tabloid press, like, they're going through the fucking bins of everyone there.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I've done 9 shit gigs in a row that have went well. I'm talking open mic, London, 6 people there, and I've managed to turn it around where I didn't want to slash my wrists after coming off, and that's a victory at those gigs.
Yep, no, I'm with
you. And then you turn up at the fucking on gig number 9 at a theatre, everything's in place, and you go out, and the energy doesn't come back the speed you think it's going to, and you shit your pants, and you're lost for words. You know, you think that one line's going to be an applause brick. It wasn't an applause brick. What, you need more from me? Oh, all right, let's start talking about the lamps. What kind of shoes are you wearing, sir? And if you watch that first prosecution guy who comes up and goes, he was found with the body and cutting them, and then you got the fucking cowboy guy spinning the gun going, we're in Texas, baby.
I'm the sizzle, he's the steak.
before we start,
teaming one another in, aren't they?
Yeah, Before we start, unlike the prosecution, I would like us to stand up and pledge the allegiance, because this is America. It's Robert Durst with a fucking electric guitar like Kimmy Schmidt going, oh, say, can you?
What did he say? Right? What was his... Hang on, let me get his name right. So Dick DeGaren, here's what he said. Bob, because they didn't call him Robert, right? Because Robert is too informal. Sorry, too formal. Whereas Bob is informal. So he said, Bob has feelings. He was carrying photos of his life, carrying photos of his wife. No, it doesn't mean he's got feelings. It means he's got a fucking printer. That's all it means.
Oh, mate. And you see, this is the thing. And again, bad lawyers, bad prosecution, because I think I mentioned this in an earlier episode when they go, Bob was arrested with this photo, and he's like holding a husky by the neck, like he's Jon Snow, and he's also fucking got his wife who's missing, 99% confirmed he killed her. Next to him goes, Bob had this picture on him, Bob, and if you're a good lawyer, if I've seen a lot, I'd be like, just from TV, objection, Your Honor, relevance.
No, it was Bob's lawyer showing the photos.
Yeah, so the prosecution should have been saying, objection, relevance, because their whole thing is, make this guy a person, where it's what has this guy done is what he's done. So they're making it a cartoon fucking case of this, and the other, and they do, and it's magical how they do it. But they should have been 1,000 times, because if the prosecution, objection, relevance, speaks to the character, blah, blah, blah.
But you don't know that they didn't do that. They might have done that, right?
Because they're just there sweating because they're not used to having to wear a suit. Like, this guy, they look...
Well, they're against the legendary lawyer. That's like me and you going to play five-a-side with Messi. Well, fucking hell.
It's
and
a
small
town.
The whole world's watching you as well, right?
You
and you've turned around already and gone, we're going to fucking show that Messi what football's all about, son. So he's gone out there all cocky. Legendary lawyer turns up. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Not just that, this is a small town, like that Michael Ramsey, the steak fucking lawyer, he's probably the high school quarterback who give these coppers wedgies. He's just looking at them with that lazy eye going, how's your mama, John? Your sister called?
You give my wife your best, y'all.
He's showing him his championship rings from the high school Super Bowl that he won. He's the bad guy from Waterboy. Do you know the bad coach in the Waterboy?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Hey, water boy, you're a fire. That's...
And then you, this episode, you're cutting to, you know, after the event, so years later, he's still being, it cuts to the interview throughout years later with Andrew Jarecki, as well as the court case, and as well as speaking to the jurors who were on there, the lawyers. And some of them lawyers haven't aged well, but
it's, you know, packed together beautifully. This is
incredibly well done. It really is. It's well worth watching. And here was their defense, and this blew me away, because the district attorney, when she heard the defense, and she went, "Hang on, what's his defense?" The DA made me do it. No, hang on, that's bullshit.
Because
they're doing
they're
a story.
An Edinburgh show. It's a show.
Yeah.
Like, so what they do is they're like, look. Of course you'd have a wacky ringtone for texts. Someone that shouts at you.
That was from my bank telling me I'm overdrawn. How nice.
Oh, I heard that the other day. Anyway, Patreon. Content. How are you doing during COVID? This is fucking terrifying. Do you like this? Are you here? Are you listening to this?
All of that timing. Rick turns it into We Need Money. Well done, Rick. We do need money. Thanks for supporting the Patreon. So basically, a newspaper, I think it's the New York Times, wants to do a report on Kathy Durst 20 years after the event. And he decides to go on the run, which eventually leads to Morris getting killed, which is what he's on trial for. And what they're saying is the newspaper wanted to do a story on him because the DA has reopened the file. And they're saying the reason he committed murder is because he went on the run because of the DA. And Jeanine Pirro's going, this is, but I'm calling bullshit. Time out,
and,
bullshit.
And they even said that we took liberty. Like the lawyers are going, we took liberties with creating this mythical beast of Jeanine Pirro out to get him. And then when you see the court footage, Michael Ramsey, fucking hell, it goes, if Jeanine Pirro had kept her mouth shut, none of this would have happened. And you're like, oh my God. Oh my fucking God. Because again, this is like,
Morris would still be alive.
I'm going to speak to like Texas, remarkably sexist state. All right. It's particularly like, this is like, progression is slow in these small town fucking cowboy lands. So like, even have a cross-eyed woman on the jury going, and you know what? Like, I could imagine this woman being a cunt because she shouldn't be allowed to talk.
But the thing I love about Jeanine Pirro is she's the only one who's savvy enough to go, hang on, what are you doing? You're making a documentary. Okay, I'll put my best frock on. Nobody else dresses up, right? She puts her best frock on. She puts her face on. She looks the bollocks, right? Everybody else
aged better than everyone else.
She's aged way better than everybody else, yeah. But no one else has made the effort. It's like she's the only one who got the memo. Even Andrew Jarecki, he's done all right. But I mean, he's no Jeanine Pirro, is he? She's gone to town on herself. Yeah, yeah. And so
all
confident.
They're doing,
so
they,
confident.
They are just layering information. So when that question comes of, so why did you cut up the body? I had to. We've told you 20 minutes of this shit later.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like on Edinburgh shows I've worked on, it's like, why does this happen? So you fucking plant the breadcrumbs, the fucking
in the
pieces
beginning.
In the mind as much as humanly possible to feel like you don't have a choice.
Yeah. So basically, he went on the run from New York, and because this place was going to do a newspaper report on him, and he went, I need to go away. So he decides to dress in a woman, hide in plain sight, and be a mute.
And this is hilarious because they have the jury cracking up.
The jury laughed, right? It was like he was doing a tight five.
It was masterful. It was like the way they fucking just manipulate, because that's when they shit the pants on the prosecution, because they says, I bought a wig, and they're asking him, did you buy a frock? No, I didn't buy a frock. And he just leaves it hanging there, and it's like,
I did buy a handbag, and they all laughed.
The handbag nailed them. That was the fucking line. One of them goes, I bought a woman's handbag. And then that's when the jury turns around, the prosecution turns around and goes, they've got an excellent case. And it's...
I wouldn't say they've got an excellent case. I think what they realised is they've humanised the killer. Because if he's just a killer,
exactly,
you're like...
what they went out doing.
Yeah, you're like, he's an animal. We should put him in prison. Whereas suddenly they've gone, actually, he's quite a funny guy, isn't he? We don't want to put a funny, nice guy in prison. He can't be that bad. Sure, he killed this bloke, but who was this bloke? And that was their next thing, wasn't it?
Oh,
the bloke he
Morris
killed.
Black. That picture of Morris Black, it looks like he's busy taking a hard shit. It's just the camera zoomed up to his face. Do you know who plays him in the movie? For casting, fucking perfect. He's one of your favourite walk-ons. Library cop in Seinfeld plays him in the movie.
No! That's great casting.
That's who plays Morris Black,
That is great casting. That miserable look. Yeah. Oh, that's very, very good.
That fucking droopy jowl, fucking... And they tell them all these stories. Like, Morris Black would go down the street, and if someone is smoking on their doorstep, you'd tell them off for smoking.
Yes. They just painted him out as a real arsehole. And almost as if Robert Durst was... He was doing a public service by killing this piece of shit, right?
Yeah. Because the guy even says, like the lawyer even says, we went for the old fashioned, he had it coming to him defense. Yes.
What? There's. The lawyer said this. There's an old Texas saying, we hang horse thieves and we let murderers go. And what is it? He says, there's no horses. I've got it wrong again. my short term memory.
No, because it's a weird one. It's one of those like quotes you think is at the end of every sentence, and then he says something more weird. So it's like, we have, in Texas, we hang horse thieves and let murderers go. Because we don't have any horses that need stealing, we do have people that need killing.
Yes, that was it. Perfect. Thank you.
So it's the Texas law of fuck you if you stole my horse. But you know what? If that guy was on your property, it's your God-given right as an American to shoot him in the face.
Well, here's the thing. Robert says, right? Robert Durst says, in Texas, if someone is on your property, you can pretty much do whatever you want. It's not like that in any other state in the United States.
Yeah, it's a shoot first state, yeah.
Really? What? It looks like almost he's planned to be in that state then. That's what it felt like to me. Now, yeah, bear in mind, I don't know what happens at the end.
Could be just handy that was, they could lean on that. Because I don't think he intended on the Morris Black thing. He didn't go there to kill Morris Black. Do you know what I mean?
I think that was like the little Easter egg Christmas bonus for him.
I just think it's like, oh no, did it again.
Oopsie! Oh, well. Butterfingers!
Because then you see Ramsey, the lawyer, going, if it wasn't such a sad story, it'd be quite funny, you know? Morris Black going around nipping at people and yelling at his strangers for no reason, and then Robert dressed as a woman with a joint a little bit toked up going, just trying to put it all out. Would have been really funny if he didn't shoot him in the face and dismember him. Yeah, Michael, that's the turning point on the funny story. But none of that is corroborated. It's never said that they hung out. It's never said that they were friends. They say that, so he says that Robert Black came...
Well, Durst says that they were friends.
Well, yeah, but it's not corroborated by anyone else. And everything from Robert Durst is a carefully fucking knitted story from the scenes of it.
Yeah.
To how things get to this point. So so Robert Durst's version of events is they're friends and they play with their guns. They have guns. They're playing with guns. Let's put the guns are just there. And you know what? You know things happen. Things happen when guns are there. Sometimes it's not premeditated. But Morris Black has been served with an eviction notice. And then Robert Durst leaves him in the room with this eviction notice. And Robert Black shoots the eviction notice, to which there is no bullet hole wound or no neighbors heard that noise during the day. And then he tells him, he makes him leave. And then the next day, he comes home and Robert Black has illegally got onto his property. Very important distinction there.
No, Morris.
Without being invited. Morris Black, which is an important distinction in Texas, because if someone's on your land, it's legal to shoot them in the face.
Yeah.
So then they go into a self-defense thing where he stands up, they wrestle for the gun, and he says he falls over, his elbow hits the ground, the gun goes off.
But the level of detail he puts into that confession when he's in the witness box, it's too much. You wouldn't have that level of detail, right? I've been in fights. You're not sure what happened. You're like, I don't know. We started punching one another. Next thing I know...
I didn't win them. I got a concussion. Didn't he get a concussion?
Yeah. Well, next thing I know, I get punched in the face and I'm on the floor and someone's dragging him off me and I'm lying there bleeding. You don't remember much in a fight. That's in my experience. And like Durst said, he's not fighting all the time. But he has this really concocted story, which, as he says later, you know, well, me and the lawyers went through everything multiple times so that I didn't sound... you know, as cold as I sound. Because it's the fact that he comes across in court as reasonably charming.
It's because, like, they get him to do an act out. They get him to come down and act out the thing, to which he's again coming closer, humanizing himself to the jury.
Yeah.
And then the flustered prosecution get up, who just thought that they had he's guilty, by the way, end of day, go home, have a steak. That's what they thought their fucking day was going to be like for the thing. And,
I like what they said to him. They said, why didn't you go to the police, Mr. Durst, after you shot Morris Black? And he said, well, I'd shot him in the face with my gun in an apartment that I'd rented dressed as a mute woman while on the run as a person of interest in two murder cases. I didn't think they'd believe me. Yeah, you might have a point there, Robert. And the jury bought into that, didn't they? They're like, yeah, he has got a point. Like, why would you go to the... You wouldn't go to the police, would you? With all of those bits laid against you, he's saying to the jury, what would you have done? And the jury are looking at him going, yeah, I'd probably do the same as you, mate, actually. You had no choice but to dismember that body.
That jury all has a neighbour they want to shoot. Just one step. One more step on my lawn there. I'll chuck a gun at your feet like the cowboy in Shane.
Yeah.
But there's the bit where, so he does the act out of how the tussle happened. And then they get up flustered, the prosecution, both of them are bumbling over each other and goes, so was it like this? Was it here? And he goes, no, I can't say it was like that. You all look like spaghetti. And the whole, and then the jury laugh at the prosecution.
Yeah.
The jury is laughing at the prosecution. And he goes, and then they get shitty. It's like, do you know when you do it like a fucking heckler put down, which is too harsh in the audience? And he goes, Morris Black looked like spaghetti, didn't he? He went, no, sir, he didn't.
And then they said to him, did you dismember Morris Black's body? Yes, sir. Yes, I did. Simple as that. And they said to him, well, tell us about, did you cut this bit first? Did you cut that bit first? I don't remember. I don't remember. I don't remember. And he said, look, I'm sure I got more stoned and more drunk and I just dismembered that body. That's what I did. You'd have to, wouldn't you? Yeah, I mean, if you're just going to dismember a body, you'd have to be a little bit wasted. It's not going to be easy.
He does a little bit of a wink and a smile because we're cutting backwards and forwards to the interview of Andrew Jarecki during this point.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And he says that, what was one of the things he says? He goes, I mean, Morris had tools. He had like a yeah. And he goes, I don't know if he had a bone saw. Oh, well, I went and bought a bone saw. And like, it is so fucking funny because in court, he's going, no, sir, I did not intentionally murder my best friend. Whereas when he's talking to Jerk, he's like, I have to get this corpse out of my apartment. It's like so disjointed. It's not even a person anymore. It's a fucking corpse. It's a smell he has to remove. Do you know what I mean?
And they said, and what did you do with that? Well, I put it in black bags. I chucked it in the ocean. It should have sunk. It didn't sink, did it, Robert? And he just looks at Jarecki and says, no, it did not. What did it do, Robert? And Robert, he's a comedian in the making, this fella. He looks at Jarecki and goes, it floated.
I wouldn't know how to begin to look at the tide yeah. coming. Oh, forget all that. Just throw it in there.
It'll just throw it in the ocean. Let the ocean deal with it. It should have sunk. And
but
even
then they just continue to tell you things that, like, Morris Black goes to the library to go on the internet for free. And then that's apparently where they discovered who Robert Durst was. And then he threatened them for cash. That's the police's opinion is he went, he looked up who this guy was. He was pretending to be a woman, found out who he was, and then tried to blackmail him for cash. He turned around, he got shot in the back of the head, which is why when the bin bags floated, he went and got the bag with the head in it and he ran off with the head.
Exactly. So all the body parts washed up on the shore, and all he did was he went down to the shore and he cut open the one with the head in it. Why would you just take the black bag? You don't have to pull the head out, do you? That's, I mean, clearly in a black bag, you know which one's the head and which one's the feet. And
hey, you can't argue he did the wrong thing.
And here's what I like about his lawyer, right? The legendary lawyer. He turned around, he says to the jury, he's not guilty of murder. Whatever else he's done is for another time and another place. But he's not guilty of murder. Because that was the thing that you said in the beginning. They're trying him just for murder. And they're like, well, they could have tried him on the dismembering of the body, the jumping, but a ton of stuff. No, he's not up for any of that. He's just up for murder.
And again, without a body for Kathy, which, with the Kathy case of his disappearing wife,
separate case.
They never even checked his house for 20 years until they checked the river outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And then for folk knows where in a ship bottom somewhere might be fucking buried.
Yeah.
But then those closing statements, look at the difference in composure. And
yeah.
Fucking, that is headliners against open micers.
Yes, absolutely. That's
And one of them, I don't know, I'd love to know what the board said. Because he had a big board next to him. Chip, the guy with the goat, he had a board next to him. And it might as well have been saying, like, not guilty, not guilty.
Darren Browned him.
Yeah. It was just like, it doesn't matter this, it doesn't matter that, but it does matter this. And then they're just bumbling through their closing statements. They know they fucked the case. They know it. They're getting fucking applause breaks from the jury because they're making them laugh during it.
And then when the judge hands down the verdict, it's quite tense. And I'm like, he's got to be getting a 10 stretch. Easy, right? Easy.
Yeah, because that's how you're piecing in your mind that he's doing the interview with Jurecki. Do you know what I mean? He's got.
Yeah, because I know he's been to prison, right? Because he said that he served time in prison. So I'm like, well, he's clearly guilty. Like, fucking clearly guilty. And the judge goes to the head juror and, how do you find the defendant? Not guilty. And at that point, I went, what? So I jumped back on the thing I'm watching. Like, you can jump back 30 seconds. And I went, right, let's watch that again. How do you find the defendant? Not guilty. What? And then Robert then breathes a huge sigh of relief, and you see his shoulders drop.
That
don't you?
Moment, you would need a hell, like, if to be done properly in a movie, you would need like a Helen Mirren level of legendary actor, a McKellen, fucking yeah. Someone at like their absolutely. Peak method, a Daniel Day-Lewis.
That is Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis would have to go and kill someone. And go to just to feel the experience,
but to see that
to make
footage,
it that real.
Do you know what I mean? Because yeah. You've seen not guilty verdicts in a million TV shows. You've never seen a real one like that.
And his whole body, doesn't it? That tension, you see the tension leave his body. But then he turns around to his lawyer and they have to put subtitles on it. And he says to his lawyer, did they say not? And his lawyer says, yeah. And then he looks at his lawyer again and he goes, are you sure? And he goes, yes. And he's like, oh. And then he doesn't walk out of court, right? The same way that his lawyer strode into court, he strides out. He's bowling down the court like he's a West Ham fan and we've just done Tottenham 2-0.
He's so cocky. Did you ever watch Phoenix Nights?
Yes.
Do you know when Jerry St. Clair gets the all clear and he comes running out of the hospital? He's all clear, Jerry. He's like kicking footballs. He's running around.
He's that guy, right? And as he's walked out, he turns to the stenographer and he almost points at him and clicks and goes, hi, thanks. Great stenographing. Well done. And then he sits down and he's back with Jurecki. And Jurecki says, so your lawyers told you to lie, didn't they? He said, because you told me off camera, your lawyers told you to lie. And he went, no, they didn't. What my lawyers told me were to tell the truth, but not the whole truth.
Yeah. So we resetted the oath. They studied the oath. They said, you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So as long as you tell the truth, and nothing but the truth, you can leave out bits that would make you look worse.
Yeah.
Concentrate on that so you never lie.
That's shocking. I've never considered that before.
And he told them how the lawyers told them not to do this fucking interview. We told them. We were concerned going, Bob, you're a free man. But there are people that are out there to change that. If you put your head above, and you can tell he's just like a little bit rebellious. He's always got to be rebelling against
something.
But he's
cocky, isn't he? He's just effectively got away with murder. And then, right, the episode's over, right? So I've tuned out and I'm sitting there going, this is bullshit. He basically bought his way out of going to prison. And then the Jurecki's interviewing him. And Jurecki says, look, should we just take a break? And he's like, yeah. And everyone gets up and leaves. And Robert Durst is just sitting there. And then he whispers to himself, I did not knowingly or purposefully lie. And then
he
repeats
he's reciting
it.
His words, yeah.
And you're like, what?
He's like learning his lines. I didn't knowingly. And his lawyer jumps on him like Captain America on a live grenade.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, your mic's live. And he went, what? And he went, your mic's hot. We can hear everything you're saying. And he went, well, I'm just getting, because I
did
need to
say
right.
Did you see how quickly he pivots to
creates a story.
Yeah.
It's fucking creepy, man. It's really creepy. And then it ends, right? It just ends on that. And
just the way I'd never knowingly lied. Never knowingly.
Yeah.
Purposefully, intentionally misled the jury.
He's an actor, right? It's an actor.
And again, to catch that on camera is...
But I've got an idea. There's something in my brain that knows what's going to happen here. And when I saw that bit and I went... fuck, I think I know. I'm sure I do. And then the episode ended and I'm like, okay, right, let's get this podcast recorded. Let's get episode 5 on the telly. Come on. And did you notice the theme music?
The Galveston song. It's like Curb Your Enthusiasm, yeah. But
The Galveston song at the end. It's not normally that, is it?
They changed each song at the end, but it's the same opening song.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, another great song. Well, Galveston. Like, it's a funny little song because he's just been caught doing something daft.
Yeah, it was great. So let's...
That's the end of this episode.
Was that episode good for you? I mean, did you enjoy watching that one? Yeah. Because you said that was your favourite episode.
That's when it starts to get cooking. There's one more that I absolutely love as well. But cool. Seeing that stuff, the courtroom footage, the audio, this is the selling point of the documentary for me. It is fascinating story throughout, and it's only just getting better.
Let's
So do the next one
tomorrow.
I'm going
to go watch episode 5. Right, thanks very much for listening. See you later. Ta-da.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll be right back.